Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to a new event here at the UC Davis Student Startup Center called VCs at UCD, otherwise known as Venture Capitalists at UC Davis, for those of you who do not like acronyms. As you come into the meeting, please turn on your cameras. We love to have a conversation. So before we begin, let me kind of quick give the ground rules of the game here. It's pretty simple. We're joined every week by an awesome venture capitalist that's going to come and talk to us about life in the industry, what it's like working with startups. And so it'll be a big time Q&A. I'll start the conversation, but if at any point anyone has any questions they'd like to ask or comments they'd like to make, we absolutely welcome student input. So if you have a question, just raise your hand and we'll make sure we call on you in time. So just leave the hand up if we haven't called on you yet. No need to put it down. With that said, let me introduce to you a good friend of mine, Jamie Rodota. Jamie works for a firm called Revolution Ventures based out of Washington, DC. We'll get that into that in a second. So Jamie, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. Let's all give Jamie a nice digital hand clap and wave and whatever we do to say hello. But Jamie, let's start kind of early days of your career. So you're a fellow UC alum, a different campus than Santa Barbara, but a UC alum. Tell us about college first and how that prepped you for a career working with high tech organizations, startups, and the like. So what did you do in college? How did you end up where you did? And maybe even some general advice for our students here right now.
Yeah, well, thanks, Aaron, for having me. And thanks, everyone, for joining to listen to me. Hopefully it's interesting and informative or whatever you want to get out of it. Feel free to ask questions as we go along. So yeah, college. I went to UC Santa Barbara, graduated in 2015. I actually got waitlisted at UC Davis, so you all are already just way ahead of me. I studied economics in college, which Santa Barbara didn't have like a finance or, you know, business sort of degree. They had an economics and accounting, which really wasn't my jam and wasn't what I was looking to do. But I felt economics kind of had this blend of macro thinking, like what are the big forces shaping our world, but enough of that sort of micro managerial stuff about how does that impact a business? How does that impact people's behavior and day-to-day decision-making? So just was cruising along doing that, you know, was interested in startups. This was sort of like early on when I think the big thing that sort of happened that sticks out to me of my college career that was going on externally was sort of the rise of like crowdfunding platforms. This was, you know, in 2012, 2011, like the President Obama signed the Jobs Act, which sort of like, set out a policy framework for equity crowdfunding and other crowdfunding activities that allowed entrepreneurs to access more capital. So, you know, things like Indiegogo and Kickstarter, which seems pretty commonplace today, were like pretty brand new and kind of a cool concept. So it's like, okay, that's a cool thing. And then sort of parallel to this, I grew up here in Sacramento, California. I'm a huge Sacramento Kings fan. And at the time, this was like when the Kings were, are they going to Seattle? Or are they going to Anaheim, right? Like they were almost leaving. And I knew, I was like, I love Sacramento. And I know this is a huge opportunity, not only from like as a sports fan perspective, but as like an economic impact on the city. You know, it's really important to have the Kings stay. So I was invested in it in many levels. So as I was sort of coming to the end of my college career, Santa Barbara didn't really have like an honors thesis program or any sort of that thing, but I knew I wanted to sort of produce my own work and have it be sort of at the nexus of like sports, economies, cities, all of that. So I wrote a paper with one of my econ professors, like about the economic impact of sports teams in America. It was super straightforward. Like now that I look back on it, like I was just very bad at coding and running regressions and all that sort of stuff. But I kind of like got my hands a little dirty of like, you know, what makes economies of cities dynamic? Like do sports teams play a role in it? And it just kind of like got me a little bit of work under my belt that wasn't necessarily like professional experience, but that related to something that I knew I wanted to go do. So I think that was a sort of key thing. During college, I'd been interested in commercial real estate of all things. Like, I just love the built environment. And I went and interned for a guy here in Sacramento. His name is Mark Friedman. He's a local real estate developer. But sort of while this was all going on, he ended up throwing his hat right before I got my internship. He threw his hat into the ring to be a minority owner of the Sacramento Kings. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then he told me, like, you got the internship. And like, worlds collided. I get this opportunity, sort of super lucky. And then after school, sort of translated that. I was like, hey, I want to go work for the Kings. How do I do this? Got a meeting with the CTO of the Sacramento Kings through that connection and got offered a 30-hour week internship at the Sacramento Kings. And it was kind of like, all my friends were going to like big tech companies, or, you know, going to New York or Oracle in San Francisco, right? And like making more money than I would, which I thought was important at the time. I was like, yeah, I'm not making as much money as people who were graduating school. But I just knew like Sacramento was the place I needed to be. This was the opportunity that was unique and only like was very connected to my passions. So it's like, you know, people pay thousands of, you know, take out loans to go to business school. Like, why not take like a reduced income now for the potential investment in myself and my future that this would offer? I know that was like that dove a little bit over and out of college, but hopefully that kind of answers your question.
No, it's perfect, Jamie. So I first met you when you were with the Kings. I want to ask a couple of questions about that, two very different directions. But let's start with kind of where you were leading just now, and that this was a very unusual career path for just about anybody coming out of college. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you made that decision, the pros and cons of not going the traditional path, you know, not going to Oracle or Facebook or Google, but instead coming to a smaller town, working for a sports team, you know, Robert Frost, paths in the wood diverged and all that jazz. Like, why did this make all the difference for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was, some things about the decision were tough. Some things were very easy, right? Like, sports teams are, those very like coveted jobs. And that was like a very fortunate opportunity that I had to get into that world. And, you know, I don't know if you, any of you are economic students, but like, tough. Like, sports teams at the entry level, like, pay you nothing, right? Like, because the demand for those jobs is so high and the supply is so low that it's like they don't have to, right? So that was like the pay, you know, I don't think you should judge like your first job out of college on how much you get paid personally, but like, it is important. Like, if you want to go live in a city like San Francisco, which is expensive, and maybe lots of friends are going there, which was sort of the decision for me, is like Santa Barbara, like a ton of people go up to San Francisco. It's like heavily recruited for like sales roles. I guess they think like Santa Barbara makes people social and good at talking to people on the phone and selling stuff. So there's a sort of big draw up there. So it was a trade-off. It was, do I want to go be with my friends and sort of jump into a new city, or do I sort of take this other route and go back to my hometown and like continue living there? And so I kind of went with the latter. Like, it was maybe the road less traveled, but it definitely like was sort of the decision that set me down this path to work in venture capital, work in start. Like, I've had a unique career path, I feel like, in this 5 years or so, since 6 years since I've graduated. So it's been interesting.
Yeah. Well, so Jamie, you mentioned working with Mark Friedman, this, you know, preeminent real estate developer in town, working directly with the CTO of the Kings, the chief technology officer. What was that like, being connected with some of these high powered individuals early on in your career? You know, what was the power of that network for you, and how did you make that happen at the very first days, first steps?
Yeah. So I in that first meeting with Ryan Montoya, who was the CTO of the Sacramento Kings at the time, I was like, I've got this idea. We're going to do live crowdfunding during games. Like, entrepreneurs are going to pitch their products and people in the crowd are going to like give money and invest in their thing. And it's like, it's going to be great. And they were just like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, that's just crazy. But they were like, but there's something that we like. Like, we were working on a startup pitch contest in Sacramento, like with the Kings involved. And it was just going to be this separate thing, but you kind of have an interesting idea there. Like, how does the crowd get involved? And it was sort of like recognizing like the value, you know, the reason Golden One pays the big bucks to have their name on the arena is because like every time there's a game, unfortunately not now, but like 20,000 people walk under that sign and are like, oh, Golden One Credit Union, right? Like, so like we kind of realized that that marketing power and value that sports teams create, like you could sort of steer that to a different set of eyeballs and to the benefit of local entrepreneurs. So they were like, okay, like let's run with this idea. Like, what do we do with the startup contest that kind of involves fans? And that's where Aaron was at Velocity Venture Capital at the time. And we were like, we don't know how to run startup contests. We're sports, we're a basketball team. We know how to run games and entertain people. Can you at Velocity help us, which is now Impact Venture Capital, if you're, or maybe not now, but same family. Can you help us like with the sourcing of the companies and the due diligence process? Like that's stuff that we know as well. So like kind of had this like interesting pet project to run with all. So that was like sort of the main thing I was working on at the Kings. And was very fortunate, like Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Sacramento Kings, you know, he's obviously has a Silicon Valley background and a lot of the other owners also with a Silicon Valley background. So like, this was interesting to them. And it was something like, it kind of like was unique and, you know, put me in a small, like in a smaller inner sanctum of the sort of Kings organization, like close to the owners and issues and stuff that they cared about. And then I was my sort of most of my role, I was on the innovation and technology team as their intern, which was primarily like, what is the technology going into the arena? How does the fan app get built? Some of these like just more like run of the mill product and technology questions around the fan experience at an arena. So I kind of had my foot in both worlds, like doing some local startup stuff, but also, you know, how do we make Golden One Center the most connected fan experience in the world? And Ryan Montoya, like talk about like how important early mentors are in your career. Like I didn't maybe plan this out as well, but it like totally happened. And perhaps it happens to everyone in their career, like, or those who are lucky, like the value of someone who's like a really good mentor and like can take care of you and sort of shepherd you through like new territory early on in your career is like super valuable. Like Ryan and I are still close friends. He's actually now working for the Biden administration and moved to DC. So I'll like get to live in the same city with him again, but he's always been someone that I've kind of like consulted with, asked about, and like, it's awesome to have like someone that I can be like, my first boss is awesome. And I'd love to like, I'd talk to him and keep in touch.
It's awesome. I love to hear that. So Jamie, I want to talk a little bit more real quick about Kings Capitalize. So this is that tournament you're talking about. I'm not sure all of our students know much about it. So give us a quick rundown as best you remember. It's been a couple of years since you ran it, but what that program is, what it did, and why in the world an NBA team would be working with startups.
Yeah. So I'm sure the details have changed slightly, but I'm guessing that the overall framework remains the same. So we put out the call to startups within a 75-mile radius of Sacramento and said, submit your application to this pitch competition. You know, about 100 startups was sort of like a good benchmark and usually what we got each year. We took the top, we kind of did it like a March Madness style. It was like basketball theme, kind of kitschy, right? The top 16 or so came and like pitched at the arena. Pitched at the arena, 16 pitches with like judges there asking questions. And it was like sort of like a more typical pitch competition format, if you will. From there, the top four would be selected. So the final four, we're going to continue this basketball analogy. And then those four, we would help make like Kickstarter type videos that sort of like told about their business in like a one minute, 90 second clip. Those four videos were then shown, you know, one game a night was like one game per season was like the tech night. So there'd be like VR headsets on the concourse and just other tech companies. And it's like just kind of trying to expose people to tech, startups, entrepreneurship, all that sort of thing. And then like throughout the game, like one timeout per quarter would be allocated to each of these videos to run. And then fans would vote on their phone, but and then judges would also sort of continue to pick informed by the fan vote. And then a winner would be announced and like trotted out onto the middle of the court with a big check and, called the winner, right? And I think they got like $5,000. It is, why a basketball team would want to do this, this a number of reasons. I would say like one is like it's good community relations, right? Like this is not something that a lot of sports teams do. Actually, a lot of teams have launched similar initiatives. Like the Green Bay Packers, for example, have like a pretty big local startup support initiative there, as do others. I can't remember off the top of my head. So it's like good community relations. We wanted to sort of be perceived as like the, to be blunt, the product on the court was perhaps not the best. So like what things could you do beyond the basketball realm that like showed that you were thinking forward thinking and trying to do new things? So that was part of it. But also like my belief and sort of why I was passionate about this was at a deeper level. Like when I did that study in college about like the economic impacts of sports teams in America, like publicly subsidized arenas, which is a whole different long conversation, but like when cities publicly subsidize arenas, it like generally doesn't turn out quite as rosy as the cities present it on the face of it. And like, but I knew it's like, okay, if the Kings are staying in Sacramento, it's going to have a public subsidy, but like what's something that a sports team has never done to like try to return that investment in a different way? And so like supporting local entrepreneurs sort of intuitively made sense to me. It's like, oh, we'll use that. What is something that you could do with when there's one sports team in town versus when there are zero sports teams in town? Like that binary from zero to one is sort of an important distinction. And we just kind of ran with it. And now, and it's like, I think the city of Sacramento is like kind of the lead sponsor of it now. And like it's like become this thing. And it's like, now what I'm learning here at Rise of the Rest, like tentpole like events and things that convene the local startup communities are like actually really important to like non-coastal tech. Would this work with the Golden State Warriors? Probably not, right? Like in the middle of Silicon Valley, like the best companies probably aren't gonna apply to that, right? Like, or want to be a part of that. But in somewhere like Sacramento or Green Bay, like that is that's like the biggest thing you can do as a startup in your town. So like, it's just understanding your local context, your site and situation, if you will, and putting the right thing together.
Awesome. So Jamie, so you went from this tech role in with the Kings organization into tech startups and ultimately into venture investing. Tell us a bit more about that career evolution, how that happened, and then let's dive in a bit to what you're doing now.
Yeah. So one of the other many hats I wore at the Sacramento Kings was like during games, there wasn't like a whole lot for me to do in terms of like the app would run and do stuff. And like, unless it was the startup game, capitalized night, not a lot for me to do. So because I worked so intimately on the like building of the technology infrastructure throughout the arena, and that was sort of a really showcase piece of what that arena is all about. Anytime like some sort of VIP guest would come and visit the game, they were like, hey, Jamie, like take him on the tour. So I was like sort of like a VIP tour guy. There'd be like senators or Congress people or the governor, right? Like it was super cool opportunity. And it was like just really fun to just kind of walk around and talk about the stuff. And one night, it was the team from WeWork, who I'm sure you guys have all read about WeWork this and what their story has evolved into, but this was before that. And they were exploring coming to Sacramento, which is like a big deal. And I met these guys from WeWork and they were sort of like getting shown the ropes and like being courted by like Sacramento and like the greater Sacramento Economic Council. And I was like, that WeWork company is kind of cool. Stayed in touch with one of those guys. Like he gave me his card and I was just like, at a certain point I was like, hey, like I'm thinking of like moving out of Sacramento. I've been here, most of my life and all of my like post-college life. I just want to like do something new. And he's like, oh yeah, like we got a job for you. Come down and work for us. So like, it was like, I like working with startups. You know, what better place to work for with startups than WeWork? There's like the biggest co-working company in the world. So I was just like, yeah, let's do it. I moved to Oakland. I worked in San Francisco and just worked for WeWork for about 11 months. And that was sort of when I was like, yeah, like this really big company that was sort of like trying to do a lot of things at once. And I was like, this isn't necessarily for me. And sort of partway through my time there, Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Sacramento Kings, had reached out and he had started a new venture capital fund backed by the whole University of California system and wanted me to come join him. It was like right after I'd left, I was like, I just started a new job. I can't like just leave a couple months into this. But ended up when I sort of saw that the future path that WeWork wasn't what I wanted, thank goodness, because WeWork kind of went on a total tailspin. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll go back and work for you. I know, you know, it's someone that I know. So why, you know, kind of get back in that world. So his fund is called Bow Capital. Their offices in San Francisco and Menlo Park. It's a $250 million Series A and Series B fund backed by the University of California. We could get into like what that really means. I'm happy to explain that. But I was brought in to really do like a non-investor role. And I think there's like an important distinction, which we can also talk about later, which is like the investment roles at venture capital firms, which are like the kind of partners are like the sort of top of that food chain, but like you may hear the word principal or vice president or associate or analyst. Like that is sort of the like analyst, associate, vice president, principal, partner. That's sort of like the investor food chain. I don't know, you know, hierarchy perhaps is a better word, is the right word. But on the non-investment side, like there's at some of these funds, like armies of accountants that like manage all of the different funds. There's some venture capital firms have on staff recruiters that actually help the companies that they invest in, like hire talent or, you know, place candidates, all that sort of stuff. Marketing and content people, like, you know, perhaps you list, there's a venture capital podcast, like in the A16Z podcast, Andreessen Horowitz's is a commonly cited venture capital podcast, but there are many others, but also a lot of people writing blogs, those types of things. And then sort of another, you know, general portfolio support, like, hey, we want to get AWS credits, or we need to find new office space, like things that just help the portfolio, like CEOs and founders, like run their business better. And then there's like this sort of broad category of like network engagement, which is what I was really doing at Bow Capital. It's like Vivek, as the owner of the Kings, you know, he has this like NBA network that can be additive and supporting of both the firm's investment operations and the portfolio. But he also has like his business network and background from Silicon Valley. So like who are the best people, you know, from whether it's Apple or FedEx that we can get in contact with to support our companies. But then the one that I was really passionate about was sort of the most important task was like, how does a venture capital firm that is aligned with the University of California, like find great opportunities to make investments from the UC system? Or a lot of times it was find UC experts to help us diligence companies. Perhaps we're looking at some like very specific, like deeply technical company in the UC, right? There's like 10 campuses, 5 medical centers, 3 national labs. Like there's an expert in whatever you want, basically from all around the UC system. So doing that, or like, how can we help our companies sell into the UC system? Maybe as like a medical device company, and they could go to one of the medical centers at, you know, UC Davis Med Center, those types of things. Does that help explain sort of like, so yeah, investing roles. I went in as a non-investor, but in a very sort of strategic way. And that's when, to accomplish that sort of UC plus venture capital mesh, I would, if you will, a lot of my job consisted of like going and visiting campuses, right? Like I'd go to UC Davis and talk to Aaron or talk to Nikki at the Child Institute, or, you know, Justin Siegel at the Innovation Institute for Food and Health. Like there's amazing people at UC Davis doing a ton of awesome stuff. We had a portfolio company from there. Go to San Diego, go to Irvine. I didn't actually make a work trip to Santa Barbara, but I wish I did. And that's when I sort of realized, like, yeah, Berkeley is, everyone looks at Berkeley as like, you're like, oh, I went to UC school. Like, oh, did you go to Berkeley? I'm like, no, we went to Davis. We went to Santa Barbara. Like, you all know how that goes. But I was like, there's so much special stuff at all the other nine campuses. And like, why is that not getting paid as much attention to? And that's where I was like, yeah, there's something to this I'm from Sacramento, which is like kind of an overlook. When you tell people you're from California, they're like, oh, are you from LA? Yo, you're from San Francisco? It's like, no, I'm from Sacramento. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, oh, did you go to Berkeley? No, I went to Santa Barbara. Okay. And I was like, there's some cool, like the underdog, the overlooked thing is like, there's awesome stuff going on there. So I spent a lot of my time focused on those sort of the rest of the UC. And then I met the guy who held my job previously at Rise of the Rest, I'll explain that, like Revolutions Rise of the Rest seed fund, at a conference in New York. And basically I was like, our whole thesis is we only invest in companies outside of Silicon Valley, New York City, and Boston. Like that is all that we do, because 75% of venture capital goes to those three places. So like, but there's innovation and talent and ingenuity is evenly distributed, but opportunity and access to capital is not. And that's sort of what we seek to address.
Yeah. So Jamie, let's talk more about this revolution thesis. Why you think it's powerful, what the firm does, how it got founded. And then after we go through that, maybe we can talk about the difference between Revolution, the firm, and then specifically the Rise of the Rest fund.
Some of this like a firm and a fund and LPs and all that sort of stuff. I love those sort of technical conversations about venture. But starting from the beginning, so Revolution was started in 2005 by Steve Case, who is the co-founder of AOL. I don't know if any of you all had AIM screen names back in the day, or remember those CD-ROMs where they get you on the internet. But that guy, Steve Case, after he sold AOL to Time, or merged AOL with Time Warner and left the business, he wanted to start investing in and founding new companies. They started Revolution Health and Revolution Money. There were a variety of companies that they incubated internally, but they also started making investments. And at the time, it was Steve's private, his own money, which what would be called in the industry a family office. It was all his, however many billions of dollars investing into startups and starting new companies. And that was kind of how they started off. And from about 2005 to 2010. And then in 2010, they realized like, hey, we kind of got something here. Like this, former AOL team members, like they're based in Washington, DC, and sort of saw the potential of investing and starting a venture capital firm outside of the Valley. So in 2010, they decided to start raising outside capital, which is when you really become a venture capital fund. They started with Revolution Ventures, which is like was a Series A. They make like $3 to $10 million investments, raise $200 million funds, and then a couple of years later they started, we're like, okay, this is going well. Then they launched a Revolution Growth Fund, which started, invested maybe like $15 to $25 million, much bigger investments. And then all the time while this was going on, so Steve, as a Washington DC based, and this is the time when Obama was president, this was, just coming out of the financial crisis, the Great Recession. And something that was going on was like, we need to sort of get the economy going again around the country. And there was this thing that Steve chaired, like the president's board on innovation and entrepreneurship. The product of that was the Startup America Partnership, which was sort of this like network of people across the country that were local leaders in their ecosystems, whether it was from, I think there may have been Sacramento ties, but Austin and Tulsa and Kansas City, all these sorts of places. How do we like get funding and resources to these people so that they can start like thriving startup and innovation ecosystems in their city? So this is where Steve, I think, really, as an entrepreneur who built his business outside of Silicon Valley and then saw this through the lens of like economic recovery, because the number one the number one creator of net new jobs is small, like high growth entrepreneurship. Like every year, the Fortune 500, like the gains in jobs created in one set of rising stocks and the other are offset by the, you know, tumbling stocks on the other side. But high growth startups like, you know, Facebook or Google, right? Like those started as 3-person companies, but are now 400,000 people. So this is where he got involved in this. And then in 2014, they launched a bus tour, which was like, kind of like, you know, this is a very Washington DC thing. Like presidential campaigns, like they get on buses and they like go hit the road and just like meet people and shake hands and kiss babies and learn about what's going on in Iowa or New Hampshire, right? So Steve sort of like launched the same playbook. Like, let's get on a bus, let's go to Nashville, let's go to Chattanooga, let's go to Minneapolis and just like get into these cities, meet the people who are really building local startup communities and make investments in there. So they would have a pitch competition at the end of each day. And Steve would invest personally $100,000 in the winner of those pitch competitions. Then, you know, did that about 5 or 6 times, 5 cities, 5 days, and just like kind of ran through a lot of the Eastern US. They did some in the Southwest with like Salt Lake and Phoenix and Albuquerque. And then in 2017, raised our first fund based on this thesis that because 75% of venture capital goes just to those, you know, Silicon Valley, New York City, and Boston, we believe we can invest, you know, do seed stage investing across the country that are outside of those locations and make great returns, showing people that you can do good, you can like spread access and opportunity to the rest of the country, and you can also do well. And so if we're, you know, our belief is that if we're successful at our mission, you know, not only will we be like financially successful as a firm and a fund, but all the cities around the country will rise and benefit as a result. So, you know, we have companies all over the place and we're super excited about it. Should we talk about maybe like seed ventures growth? Like, is that a more, do you want to go this more technical route, Aaron, or what do you want to?
Yeah, Jamie, I think that'd be really helpful. Just kind of explain that difference really fast. And then one more question I'd like to ask, and then I want to make sure everyone here gets a chance to raise their hands too, but explain those differences, and then love to hear maybe some of the investments your firm has made that you find really exciting. If there's some companies or even just some actions you guys have done that really excite you, I'd love to hear some of those stories.
Yeah. So when people like, there's revolution is sort of this umbrella term for everything that Steve does. And he works across all of the funds or families of funds. So I'll refer to the families, if you will. So we're sort of at the lowest rung in terms of the size of checks that we write. We write $250,000 to $1 million checks into seed rounds. So these are typically companies valued between $3 and $15 million, which, you know, might put our initial ownership percentage at about like 3 to 6%, somewhere in that. So very like minority stakes in these companies. And for the most part, all venture capital is minority stakes in companies. That's our band and we have the strict geographic focus of not in Silicon Valley, New York City, or Boston. Then above us is Revolution Ventures, which is, you know, your Series A, Series B sort of firm. They may write checks of $5 to $15 million in the, you know, $20 to $40 million valuation range. And Revolution Ventures is unique in that they go for very high ownership initially. They want to acquire about 30% of a company at the initial check, and they're very hands-on investors. So they take a board seat. They only make maybe like 3 investments a year, whereas I should have said this, we make about 20 investments in a year, very high volume. They make about 3 or 4 investments in a year and are just deeply, deeply involved with each of these companies and essentially don't let them fail. Like hell or high water, this company is not going to go to zero. They're going to work their butts off to make sure that it happens. you know, ours is more of a volume play, and the unfortunate or, you know, realistic reality of venture capital is that oftentimes if you invest in 100 companies, the success of one or two of those companies is going to make back all the money that you spent on the rest, on the other 98, and then make you your profit on top of that. They just take a different, a more targeted, lower volume approach. So that's the Revolution Ventures second layer. Above them is Revolution Growth. They make, you know, $15 to $50 million investments. And in, they do a lot of like consumer companies. So if you're familiar with like Sweetgreen or Kava or Clear, they're like the kind of like TSA PreCheck, but the more like tech version of looking thing at the airport. DraftKings was one of their notable exits recently. It's companies like that. And I would say like return expectations are different at each level because of the availability of information. So we invest at the seed stage, and there's not a ton of track record to go off of, right? And that's reflected in the price, right? Like they don't have maybe a ton of revenue. They're probably like making less than 50K a month or $1 million a year or something in that range. But they've only been around for a year or two perhaps. So based on our like $250,000 investment, a good return is like 10X return on that. Like that's what we're looking for. And then perhaps at the Series A, Series B, you're also looking, you know, obviously you want those 10X plus returns, but like 5X perhaps is a more appropriate, you know, you have enough data to say like, we can model this out and expect a 5X return. And then growth, which is really like another word for like Series C, Series D and beyond, like they can go up to E, G, F, they get a little out of hand. But they have so much data, they have so much robust understanding of how this company makes money and how they will continue to grow, that they can, you know, reasonably expect 2 to 3X return, which is, you know, still high risk, but is a great sort of more solid understanding of where the company is headed.
Awesome. Well, Jamie, last question here before I totally open the platform, but we've got a room here full of undergrads, ambitious, excited, interested in startups one way or another, either working for one, launching one, or investing in one. Any last general advice you'd give? You know, if you were talking to yourself back in your UC Santa Barbara days, what advice would you give to yourself if you wanted to pursue a career in the world of startups?
Yeah, I think it's, I would say like try to, you know, y'all are considered Gen Z, right? Is that the, am I correct in thinking that? Like, I'm a millennial, right? But like soon Gen Z will be like, if not already, is like the most like sort of influential and consequential generation in our country right now. And like the most diverse, the like has, you know, completely digitally native, like upbringing, like just all the things that, you know, like I'm just regurgitating like the old man speak probably of this, but like that is like the, what investors and like entrepreneurs are trying to like capture in a bottle right now is like, where is the world headed? And like, what is like the maturation and growth and like growing disposable income potential of Gen Z? Like what does that do to our economy? And like, how is that going to disrupt what happened in sort of the previous wave of innovation? Like, I don't really use Facebook personally anymore, but like Facebook is like arguably has a monopoly. And it's like monopolies are meant to be toppled. Like, what is that next thing going to be? And I think like Gen Z truly does sort of hold the key. Like we, you know, TikTok made sort of strides in the last couple of years. And that's like, it's, you know, we can, the whole political and China macro, whatever, like conversation is a different thing, but like, it's generally a good thing that like Facebook and Instagram, which are the same thing, like they have more competition, right? And so like the more that you can sort of, maybe it's putting pen to paper, maybe it's some other form, but like forming, codifying, or just like proposing your worldview and like why this is it. And whether that's putting it down on paper, creating, you know, I've seen people really successfully like put together like, you know, industry decks. Like this is where I think like women's health technology is going to go over the next 10 years. And this is why I think it, and here are companies that are indicative of that. That's, I would say, is sort of a one way to do it. The other way is, like, you know, try to follow young investors. There's a lot of, like, communities online growing. Like, I would say, are you familiar? Let me find it real quick. It's called Accelerated. It's like there's a set of twins. They call themselves the Venture Twins. They went to Stanford. I think they graduated my year from a firm called CRV. My Chrome is freezing, but go look up, like, Accelerated newsletter or something like that. Like, their explicit focus is on, like, college students and Gen Z. Like, they want, and they have, like, a Slack community that's all of kind of people helping each other sort of understand the paths into venture, those sorts of things. But yeah, I think, like, forming your own worldview, sort of taking a contrarian bent to it, but also, like, understanding, like, what is yours? Why are you uniquely positioned to, like, make those statements, make those claims? Like, I know UC Davis, like, when I think UC Davis, I think food, but there's probably a bunch of other, you know, things that you're focused on that are incredible that UC Davis excels at. Like, lean into those and try to build the right experience set that sort of gets you to where you want to go.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. We'll check that out. Accelerated newsletter. Appreciate the pointer. Well, so folks, we are at the 2 o'clock hour. We've kept Jamie longer than we promised. So we're going to have to wrap up now. But Jamie, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate the insights, hearing your story. See if it's not something some of us can replicate at some point. And then for those interested, Jamie just shared his email address in the chat box. So if you have any questions, by all means, feel free to ping him and follow up. I know he's one of our biggest fans here in the Sacramento area, so we'll go make him proud. But round of applause, Jamie. Thank you again very much. That was awesome. Appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you around UC Davis, if not physically, virtually sometime soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you. It was nice to meet you all. Yeah, shoot me an email if you want to talk more. Perfect. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, thanks, everybody.